That's GB, not GQ.
Giles Brown.
Petty the biography, written by Warren Zanes, rocker, writer and friend of Tom Petty, is an honest and evocative account of Petty's music and a remarkable rock and roll history he and his band, The Heartbreakers, helped to write. From meeting Elvis, to seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, to producing Del Shannon, backing Bob Lynn, putting together a band with George Harrison, Dylan Roy Orbison and Jeff Lynne, making records with Johnny Cash and sending, well, more than a dozen of his own celebrating recordings high into the charts, Tom Petty's story has all the drama of a rock and roll epic. I am delighted to be joining me live on the line from the east coast of the States, the writer behind Petty the Biography, Warren Zanes. Warren, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
So tell me a little bit, because we think we know Petty, and a lot of people have come to Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, should we say late on, or if you like, that sort of MTV mid-80s, stuff like Won't Back Down and Free Falling, but there's an awful lot more to Tom Petty than just sort of the album-friendly AOR.
Well, there's four decades of goodness there. I came in myself on the first record. I was 11 years old, and I grew up in New Hampshire, and the rock station that we had was WBCN out of Boston, and they were one of two stations that really pushed that first album, and the album was, for all practical purposes, dead until a particular promo man by the name of John Scott resuscitated that. And yeah, for those who start with Full Moon Fever, there's no time like the present to go back to the debut and work your way forward. Because I personally think, along with, you know, working with Harrison, working with Dylan, working with Roy Orbison, et cetera, these guys should be known for making solid records one after another without failing us on any one of those recordings.
And I mean his background, fill us in a little bit on the background, because he's from Florida, but he's not sort of that sort of Miami Beach sort of big smiley teeth Florida. I mean, his is very much a sort of a Southern man background.
Yeah, I mean, his Florida may as well be Georgia. And, you know, we know what's come out of the southern states like Georgia. It's, you know, the greatest American soul music. So he had one foot in that world. You know, I think of him as being like some of the writers like Dan Penn and Donnie Fritz, you know, white guys who moved in a black world and created this great hybrid music. But so there's Petty in Gainesville, same town that produces Bernie Ledden and Don Felder of the Eagles. Bernie also in the Flying Burrito Brothers. Allman Brothers are down the road. Lynyrd Skynyrd is opening up for Petty's band Mudcrutch. Stephen Stills went to Gainesville High. There's something about that town. It's the radio, it's the club network, and really importantly, it's that a university in the post-war years just exploded in terms of the student population. So it was just perfect for the youth culture that was blowing up. And that's what Petty comes out of. You know, you add Beatles on Ed Sullivan to that, and you've just got the perfect recipe.
I mean, people tend to think that, you know, the music in the States, you've got a really blinkered view. You tend to think sort of East Coast, you know, New York, all the stuff like that. Okay, you've got Detroit and Motor City and all the whole bit with the Motown. You've got the West Coast, you know, bring out the Beach Boys. But people tend to forget, you know, that huge movement, you know, coming out of Muscle Shoals, Macon, you know, that Georgia South sound, which, like you said, Allman Brothers, you've got, you know, Dr. John, you've got Skynyrd coming out of there. And there was this huge movement.
Yeah, if you could really boil American music down, they made the records in the cities. They needed the factories. But it's more rural than not, and it's more southern than not. And you've got particular pockets that just vibrated at a little bit of a higher intensity.
So how did it all come about then? I mean, obviously the southern bands have got this reputation for touring ferociously and playing every gig they came across. Is it same with Tom Petty?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, the period he comes up in, you know, late 60s, early 70s, into the mid 70s, that's just the way it was. You know, you didn't sit at home, you didn't wait that long between records. It's a time of work, And he stuck with that throughout his career, even when later on artists start to take 5 years off between records, you know, to go find themselves. That's not where he ever lived. He was a working man from the get-go, but in particular in the 60s and 70s, that's the way it was for everybody.
So what was the turnaround moment then when he went? Because I think did he cut the first album? Was it over at Sound City in California, in Los Angeles? Was that the first major breakthrough album they cut there?
No, the bulk of the first record. I mean, they touched down at Sound City, you know, at various points in their career. But when they signed to Shelter Records, it started as a deal with Mudcrutch, the band that preceded the Heartbreakers.
Right.
Then once the Heartbreakers got cooking, Denny Cordell, who was running Shelter Records, built a studio right next to the Shelter offices with some gear from Leon Russell's Tulsa Church studio, and most of it was done in that studio.
So has it mainly been, I mean, you said the band before, but has it always been Tom Petty as frontman, Tom Petty as singer, songwriter, composer, and then the band come along with him, you know, be it the Heartbreakers, whoever else, in the background, but it's very much Tom's compositions?
It's a band story. There's no way around that fact. You know, I think of American rock and roll bands, they're the steadiest unit. And I think Petty is to be credited as being a remarkably intuitive band leader. But is it his show? You know, without a doubt. Did it start there? No. You know, real bands find out who the leader is. They start with one guy singing lead, and then it changes. You know, these are not bands that are put together by some, you know, A&R man, you know, who thinks he might be able to make a few bucks off some good-looking boys. You know, these guys start, they find themselves, so the prehistory to understanding the Heartbreakers is crucial, because it's during that prehistory that Petty comes forward as singer, as leader, and then by the time we see him, it's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And from that time forward, it's his band. But he's got a real gift for making space for the talent around him. And that includes, of course, Mike Campbell, one of the greatest guitar players and writers that rock and roll knows. Ben Montench, keyboard player. And that guy's got musical support like, you know, nobody else.
So I mean, you've worked with Petty. I mean, you know him sort of because obviously your own band, the Del Fuegos, has opened up for Petty 30 years ago. What was it like then? I mean, how did you come up with the idea, or was it given to you to do this book on Tom Petty? And how did you go about it? And as you know the man pretty well yourself.
Well, I was writing some. I did a companion book for the Peter Bogdanovich documentary. I did notes for the live anthology. So I was in and around the Heartbreakers camp as a writer, and Tom approached me about a biography. And, of course, I wanted to do this, but the significant thing is the way he kind of set up the deal, which was it was my book. You know, those are the first words out of his mouth. It's your book, you know, not ghostwritten, not co-written. And that meant I had control. And he held to his promise never to tell me what went in or what went out. And he gave me full access, and he opened up every door that I needed to be opened. So it's really remarkable what he did. If you look around at his peer group, the moves he made are atypical. You know, you don't see a lot of this. And it was, you know, what do we associate Tom Petty songs with? A kind of, you know, it's a rock and roll song with this emotional honesty. He wanted that honesty in a book form, so he set it up this way.
I mean, also, you say, you know, he let you have access to everything you wanted. I mean, there, you know, people might think it's just all sunny rock and roll and sort of catchy jingles, but there's a lot of darkness in the Tom Petty story. I mean, you know, he had his troubles with the substance abuse.
Yeah, well, you know, the way I think of it, people say, oh, rock and roll bands are like families. It's like, they're kind of like families, except they're 10 times more difficult. And think about how difficult families are, you know. So is it all rosy? No. You know, we associate the music with putting the top down and feeling the good feelings that the music provides. But in order to get those songs turned into records, supported by a band that's been together long enough to have an identifiable sound, a lot of work and emotional taxation happens. And I needed to detail that in the book. And, you know, bands are worth it, but bands are very difficult because it starts with friendship, and in order to stay together, it's got to become business.
Yeah, always a tricky one. I mean, do you think that, because, I mean, the number of bands that have fallen up over business contracts and the small print or whatever are legendary. You talk about Petty's emotional honesty a little bit earlier. I mean, that's his lyrics on top of some, you know, bloody good tunes, pardon my French. But is that what makes, you know, Tom Petty? Because, I mean, the fan base is it's not so stealth-like. I mean, they're there in their thousands, their millions. Is that what connects Tom Petty with his audience?
I think so. I mean, what do we go to music for? You know, if it doesn't sound like the truth, a good hook isn't going to keep us there. You know, I just don't believe that. We go to music when we're feeling good, but even to a greater degree, we go to music when we're having a hard time. And if it doesn't have that emotional honesty, it's not going to do what we need done, you know? And Petty's always delivered that without overselling it. You know, this is many miles from Mariah Carey. You know, this is a guy singing with a voice that is so identifiably his, and he's just, I think personally, having like watched up close, I just don't think he could, I don't think he could tell the lie in a song. I think songwriting's always been a safe place in his life, and it's where he goes to say stuff he might not be able to say elsewhere. So to not be dealing in the truth wouldn't work for him.
Warren, you've just nailed somewhere that I always like to be, and that is miles from Mariah Carey, just to let you know there. From miles from Mariah Carey.
People even know who she is anymore.
Oh, don't even. I'm sure there's an app coming out or something, or you know, you'll get a new phone and she'll be in there somewhere singing at you. Full Moon Fever came along and it went absolutely, maybe it was an MTV generation thing, but before you knew it, he was, you know, it was a huge album. Do you think he was quite prepared for how huge it would be?
Well, on some level, I would say no, because the first thing that happened with that record was he thought he had something great and his label rejected it. And it was the first time that it ever happened in his career. So the starting place before that record came to the public was record label rejected it. The bands, you know, the Heartbreakers, a few of them started dismissing it as, you know, not up to snuff. And so why should he? He believed in it, but a couple of the early messages he was getting were not positive messages. So I think he just kept having to go back to the recordings and, you know, being reminded, like, no, this is great. And then it went into the world. And, you know, hey, we get to be the ultimate judges. And the judgment was favorable.
Put it mildly, the fact that the record label rejected that, which was one of the biggest selling albums of the top, you know, of that decade, is quite incredible. What's Petty's relationship like with other musicians? I mean, we know he worked with obviously quite a few of them. Is it easy to get along with in terms of musicianship and ego? He doesn't bring it all into the studio with him.
Well, I was doing an interview with Graham Parker on another subject. And Graham Parker was talking about working with Jack Nitzsche on Squeezing Out Sparks. And he said that Jack Nitzsche, when he talked about the Stones, he said, the amazing thing about the Stones is that they go into the studio and they really, truly leave their egos at the door to enough of a degree that any contribution that makes the song better is accepted. It's not like, oh, we don't take contributions from that guy. If that idea makes the song better, it's accepted. So they have enough of a kind of ego reduction that the best possible recording can be made. I think Tom Petty is like that. You know, he wants to turn a great song into a great record. And so guys who really, if that's their ambition, they're probably going to get along with other guys who have similar ambitions. And those guys are the ones who end up being the Dylans and the George Harrisons. You know, they've gotten to be superstars because they know when is the right moment to set the ego stuff aside. And they make great records. And I think these guys have just been attracted to Petty. And he hasn't gone out. He didn't go hunting for a Bob Dylan or a George Harrison. They came to him. You know, they heard something in the music. They met him. They recognized his intelligence. They fell in love with his sense of humor. And then good musical things took place when Tom Petty was in the room.
I mean, he's still out there. He's in his mid-60s now, which is hard to believe, but that's just time's winged chariot getting us all. And he's still making records and still recording. So, you know, there is an audience out there for his stuff.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, here's what I find interesting about Tom Petty is he's been so steady in his record making. You know, Hypnotic Eye, his first, you know, at 64, his first number one. And the thing just cooks from first track to last track. I think that he goes in to make records with a mindset of, there's no reason to do this unless I got a shot at this being my best record. So we could possibly have a moment where Tom Petty's 68 years old, and he gives us the record that we all think of as his best. You know, that's the brand. You know, he created that over four decades. And that's pretty compelling, and I personally think that's the way music should be. Just like the old country guys like George Jones, Johnny Cash, you never thought of them as stopping. You know, you knew that they might make their most important musical statement at the end of their lives, and Petty's in that camp, and that, I find that very compelling.
I was about to say, you know, you touched on Cash. You know, I was going to say something like a Muddy Waters or a John Lee Hooker, you know, bringing out superb albums towards the end of their careers.
Right, right. And for some reason, we don't think of rock and roll in those terms. Like, we want to go see the Stones, but we really don't take their latest album all that seriously. Petty's different.
What was it like when you sent the finished manuscript off to the man himself? Did he see a copy before it came out, and did you get word back, or did you just take it to your publisher and say, right, you know, publish and be damned?
Oh no. We had an arrangement. You know, it was my book. I had creative control, but he got to read it before publication, and we set aside time so he could read, and then we could sit down together. And the thing he asked for was the capacity to respond to anything that he felt the need to respond to. Not that he would, you know, if somebody said something that he did not like, I wouldn't take it out, but I would make room for his response. And so he got the first half of the book and then a second installment with the later half of the book. And we did a total of 6 days. You know, a lot of it was just talking through things. Sometimes it was fact-checking, and sometimes it was him saying, no, that person got it wrong. Here's the way I see it. And I just included both those voices. So there are several points at which you'll hear from 2, 3, even 4 band members on the same situation. And, you know, truthfully, the second half of the book was harder for him. Here's a private guy, and there it is, you know, his divorce. His heroin use, his contentions within the band, you know, his wife battling with some mental illness, you know, really hard stuff that had never gone public. So, you know, it was a pretty intense and emotional, you know, 4 days when we went through that last half of the book, and you know, and then it was off to publication.
What do you think the legacy of Tom Petty is on the American music scene, you know, in particular, over the past four, almost five decades?
Well, I he's never been a self-promoter. It's just either, you know, I think it's, you know, he never wanted to be good at that. He wanted, if the songs couldn't get him there, I think he figured he was doing something wrong, and the songs did the work for him. But he hasn't been a self-promoter. He never self-mythologized. And so I think people sometimes take Tom Petty for granted. Like, there's always a great Tom Petty record, and people think it's like trees in the forest, you know, always going to be there. And so I think over time what we're going to see is his stature. I mean, he's no question, he's one of America's biggest rock and roll stars, but I think his stature is going to be on the increase, because that's the way it is with catalogs like his. I see him as being a Buddy Holly, a Hank Williams, incredible catalog of songs that have this beautiful ease to them, and it seems like they're just like fruit that's fallen off the tree. You know, he worked like a dog, you know, to get them there. But the way they feel to us, they feel truthful, they have an ease to them, and that catalog is not going anywhere. And here's the guy, he's had more songs hit the mainstream rock charts than any other artist. You know, that's catalog. And I think catalog, and just, again, that, you know, Tom Petty, you know you're hearing a kind of truth, and that's what we're... You know, more often than not, that's what we're after.
I like that. I like that idea of Tom Petty just falling like fruit from a tree. But yeah, you're hearing the truth. After this one, because you're a busy man when you want to be, what are you up to next, Warren? What's your next project?
I'm way too superstitious to talk about it. I'd certainly got one up in my mind. I am doing a long-term project that's ongoing with Steven Van Zandt, which is a kind of history of rock and roll curriculum for middle and high school students. And so it looks at popular music not from the vantage point of the music classroom, but more from the history classroom. And I think it's a really important project. You can see it at teachrock.org. So that's ongoing. You know, I'm a lucky guy to be doing things with guys like Tom Petty and Steven Van Zandt. You know, they're the ones I grew up listening to, and these guys are the biggest fans of this music. They're its greatest missionaries, and, you know, I really like hanging out with them.
Sounds absolutely brilliant, the Gene Dobb. If people want to find you on social media, you mentioned it's teamrock.org, but they can presumably follow you on Twitter or Facebook or all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm like the easiest cat in the world to find. If you go hunt for a Warren Zanes, you're going to find one.
Super. Warren, the book is called Petty, the Biography. It came out last month. Who's it published by the way? I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
It's Henry Holt.
Yeah.
Came out a week and a couple days ago, on November 10th. So it's early, and, you know, I love the thought of people picking up a copy and taking it home to bed.
Absolutely. Warren, it's been a pleasure and a privilege to speak to you. Thanks for your time today, and have a great weekend, my friend.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
All right, bye.
Talk Radio Europe.